Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. The internet's most destructive comics and pop culture podcast. We are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. And back once again with the ill behavior, returning at last, my friend and yours, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how was Lipstick City?
Hope you missed me. I'm back.
Sit down, Waldo.
I have a lot to say about it when we get to Checks and Recs. I got to do some really super cool stuff there that was not just pure touristy stuff, even though the pure touristy stuff I did was great too. So cool. It is weird to come back from vacation exhausted. Like, I am beat.
I usually come back from vacations exhausted. I don't know that I've ever been well rested in my life. That does not seem to happen to me too often. Going places, doing things, it's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, when you go to a place like that where there's so much to do and there's so much you want to do and so much you want to see, you end up kind of like going real hard. Taking a back streets. You got it.
Because you never know if you don't go.
You said it for me. I don't need to say it anymore, which means we should just get the show going. We have a good one for you guys this week. We are going to be catching up on some panel president lists this time around, while so much of the comics community is in New York for New York Comic Con, we're here to provide you with the best ranking of characters.
It's that HQC you crave.
So we're going to be doing that. But Chris, before we get to that, we have a considerable amount of business to take care of. And that starts with thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. These are the people who will never know if they don't go to 422 Gimmick Street and slip a couple dollars under the door for us. Or, alternately, much simpler, they can just go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in as little as a dollar every month to help keep the show going, help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
Now, here's the deal. It has been a while since I've done a regular episode of the show. Mm-hmm. Because I was gone last week and we did 420 the week before that. The very, very special episode 420.
Or don't blaze it, because that's Zane Whelan's image is manufactured.
Yeah, he's a fraud. Spoilers for a 18-year-old. PSA comic and yes. Our episode from 2 weeks ago. So I'm going to go back as far as I think is proper to read some Patreon supporters. If I have left you out, please let me know and I'll make sure to read your name on the show. But here are some of our newest Patreon supporters. John McGooey.
Oh, thank you, John.
Or it could be McGooey. Not sure. Sorry, John, for not knowing how to pronounce your name. Daniel Ingalls.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Daniel. I should say the full name, because you never know who does not like the diminutive.
Josh Golden.
Thank you, Josh.
And those are our newest full-on supporters. We've had some edited pledges, both up and down, over the past several weeks. But those three have jumped on board the Patreon tugboat. To help us
okay,
out.
Hang on. I have to send an email real quick to patreon.com with their hot new mascot character, Patri, the Patreon tugboat.
If you would like to be like those people on the Patreon tugboat, you can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax. And as Chris mentioned, kick in as little as $1 a month to help us out. All Patreon supporters get ad-free episodes of everything that we do. Other Patreon supporters get things like bonus audio, which we want to do some new bonus audio very soon about the Spider-Man game, which I've finished. Chris, I think you're getting toward the end of it.
I am, I believe, in the end game.
Some get line-stepping privileges for our list segments, like Panel President, like we're about to do this week. Some get special physical rewards, like t-shirts and other cool stuff. So if any of that sounds cool to you, like something you would like, and if you just want to help us out, and you're capable of doing that, head over to Patreon and do so. All right, Chris, with that, let's do some checks and recs.
Just real quick, Matt, I want to say that it's perfect because a tugboat will like pull your ship out to sea. And so it's like our patrons are like pulling us. Like they're literally supporting us like a tugboat supports a boat.
Yeah, you're talking about this like I haven't thought it through and I just said it.
You're right, randomly. Matt. I apologize. It's brilliant and I love it. Patreon's a bad name though. I gotta come up with a better name.
Let's do some checks and recs.
Let's do it.
Chris, what do you have to check in with this week?
I've had a big week. On Monday, I kind of made a day trip up to Washington, D.C. We left at 4 o'clock in the morning. We got back after midnight. I have been tired ever since. It was 4 days ago. But we wound up just spending the day in Washington. We saw our good buddy David Wolkin, recent guest on Apocrypals. We saw our pal Jordan Witt. Which was very, very fun. And we also did the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum, where I saw the Saturn V engines, the rocket boosters that powered mankind's greatest achievement. I was filled with emotions.
That is my favorite museum at the Smithsonian, yeah. By a good measure. Yeah.
I touched a moon rock.
Yeah.
It was pretty great. We also went to the National Gallery, where we saw the only Da Vinci in the Western Hemisphere. And here's a cool thing about the National Gallery. You can get right up on it. You can, like, it's obviously it's behind glass, but you can get right up to a Leonardo Da Vinci, which is pretty impressive. We saw a bunch of Degas. We saw a bunch of Van Goghs. An amazing self-portrait from Judith Leister, who was a Dutch artist who was a 21-year-old woman who was painting her self-portrait and has the most personality I've ever seen of a portrait from the 17th century. Just really, really fun stuff. Comic book-wise, though, something else has been going on. Matt, you're aware that I've read every Punisher comic from his debut in Amazing Spider-Man up to about 2012. And the reason I did that was because I was inspired by playing that Punisher game for PS2. And I mentioned that because lately I've been playing that Spider-Man game. And the Spider-Man game, as we have mentioned, is extremely Dan Slott. Which makes a lot of sense. He wrote the book for 10 years.
It is extremely Dan Slott. It's also extremely Christos Gage, who is the credited writer of the game.
That, actually, I didn't know, but it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. He's not the only credited writer, but he's one of them.
But, you know, it's got Mr. Negative in it. It's got a lot of the costumes are pulled from – it's got, like, the big-time stealth suit and the spider armor from Ends of the Earth.
Yeah.
Like, very specific – 2010 to 2018 Spider-Man stuff is in that game.
Absolutely, it does, yeah.
So I popped over Marvel Unlimited, and I've been going back and reading all the Dan Slott Spider-Man again. Because I kind of fell off. Like, I kind of fell off before Superior. We've talked about that.
Yeah, no, so you're not going back to, like, Brand New Day. You're starting, like, around Big Time.
I started with Big Time.
Yeah.
Because I read... I have pretty solid memories of all of Brand New Day, and that was when it was still the rotating cast of writers, right, and artists.
Slott was one of them, but you also had Wade and Joe Kelly and Zeb Wells, and yeah. You had the Spidey Brain Trust, as they were called.
Yes. So I've just kind of gone into Big Time, and I'm rereading it, and it is an interesting it is interesting to see all of those books kind of play out in the way that, like, I've experienced, like, a Claremont Byrne X-Men, you know? Because there's a good bit of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what's up with me. Expect to hear more about that in the future. I am up to mid-2012, so I've got plenty to get through. Matt, what are you up to this week?
Well, as we said at the start of the show, I was in Los Angeles, the mean streets of Los Angeles, last week. And here's my opportunity to say on a podcast, thank you to a couple people who let me into some places and showed me around. A listener of the show, good friend of ours, Line Stepper, I believe. I think we've read quite a few of his lists on the show. Jordan Bloom is a writer on an animated show. I think I could say what it is. He's credited. It's American Dad. And so he got to let me – I got into some Fox Animation offices in L.A., got shown around the Fox Animation offices, got to sit in on a table read, which was super fun, super cool to see how that process happens, learn the whole process of from script to animatic to rewrite to rough animation to another rewrite to finished animation – to finally being a produced show, saw the booth where people record, all that fun stuff, got to do all of that. Also, thanks to Andy Khoury, who showed me around the DC Comics offices, which I can't remember who it was, which executive at DC said that they wanted DC's LA offices to look like you would want, you know, DC Comics to look like when you were 4 years old. But they pulled it off, man.
Yeah.
DC's offices are so cool. The lobby is amazing. It's got like stand-up glass cases with movie superhero costumes in them and all these. The office is full of life-size Batmans. They're everywhere. Every desk has like statues and toys and collectible stuff on it. All the offices around, you know, the edges of the building have these huge pieces of art on the glass. So it might be Mr. Miracle, it might be Batman and Robin, it might be Superman, it might be Darkseid, it might be, you know, Green Arrow, Flash, it might be, you know, any DC character that you can think of, and you know, it's reproductions of Carmine Infantino and Neil Adams and Frank Miller and Jim Lee art. It's so cool visually just to be in that. Getting toured around was super fun. I got to see all the different departments and see all the different things that they do in those offices, which is so much more than, you know, you think of as just a fan. But I also did like cool touristy stuff in LA. I went to a taping of Conan, just like walking around in Hollywood, down Hollywood Boulevard with the stars on the ground, even though we kind of got our fill of that pretty quick. Like, once you've seen that, you've kind of seen it. Also saw a lot of live comedy. Went to shows at both Upright Citizens Brigade theaters. Went to a show at the Groundlings. At one of the Upright Citizens Brigade shows, we got to see Zach Woods perform. Zach Woods, you might know from Silicon Valley. He was on The Office for a while. Also, Ian Roberts, one of the founders of UCB, was on that show. And some other great improvisers that I've heard on podcasts and stuff before. Got to see some people I know from other like Earwolf podcasts at Groundlings, which was amazing. We also went to a little comedy show in a bar that had some people Marlene remembered from the Chicago improv scene. So busy week, did a lot of stuff. Went and was really ghoulish at Hollywood Forever Cemetery. Went to a haunted house thing at the Queen Mary in Long Beach. You can hear about that when Marlene and I talk about it on Ghost of a Chance.
Oh, I can't wait.
So great trip overall. Did so much, saw so much. Got to, like I said, do some things that I wouldn't have been otherwise able to do if it weren't for, you know, this podcast and working for Comics Alliance and that kind of stuff. So I had a great time. Not exactly reinvigorated from it. In fact, quite tired. But would not trade any of it for the world. So,
question.
Yes, sir.
You walked down Hollywood Boulevard.
Yep.
You saw the stars.
Yep.
Did you deface Bob Kane's star for me?
Did not see it.
Okay.
Because here's the secret about the Walk of Fame.
Uh-huh.
It does go on.
Okay. All right.
And it's not just on Hollywood Boulevard. It's also, I think Fountain Avenue. It runs along two different streets, Hollywood Boulevard and another. And so we only walked like one particular stretch of it and saw a handful of stars, but did not see Bob Kane's. But if I had seen it, Chris, I would have spray painted NWO on it, you know, for you.
Perfect. Thank you. First of all, no one should ever go out of their way to see Bob Kane's stupid star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. You shouldn't do it. Second of all, legally do not deface Bob Kane's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah, don't do it. But also of interest, there's no rhyme or reason to that Walk of Fame.
Okay. Is it just like random?
Totally randomly situated, organized. And the criteria by which someone gets a star baffles me. As far as I can tell, if you just ask for one and you're somewhat notable, you get it.
Yeah, that's exactly. I did some research when Bob Kane happened. As near as I can figure it, yeah, it's like 10 grand. And if you are well known, you get one.
Yeah. Oh, also, I must note, had a lot of great food in LA. None as good as Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles.
Roscoe's is so good.
Boy, oh boy.
The best, Matt Diggs, took me to Roscoe's last time I was out in LA. And oh my golly gosh. It is a heck of a place.
Pan-fried chicken, man. Mm. Stuff's good. Okay, so now it's time for some recommendations. Chris, what do you have to recommend?
My recommendation this week, we've talked about it a little bit already, but it's the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum. Because...
Yep. It's dope.
Yeah, it's great. And also, it's free. You can just walk in there and touch a moon rock. That's an amazing thing to happen. I did put some money in the little plastic Saturn V. But the amount of stuff they have there, here's a fun fact for you, Matt.
Okay.
Skylab, the first space station, they built two of them. But they only appropriated money to put one in space. They have the other one in there and you can go in it. Like, you can go see a space station. Like, for reals.
Yeah, dog.
If you ever go to Washington, do go to the Air and Space Museum and witness the greatest triumphs in human history. Matt, what's your rec this week?
My recommendation is not totally self-serving.
Okay.
But it's a little self-serving.
All right.
My recommendation is that you go and subscribe to the From the Ashes YouTube channel. If you don't know what From the Ashes is, because you haven't heard me talk about it on the show before, I've talked about it a little in previous episodes. It is a show that my wife, Marlene Thompson, hosts. We shot it here in Asheville, North Carolina, back in mid-September. All the video has been edited, and now everything from the pilot episode is up now on YouTube, and we are trying to get as much attention on it as possible. As I said, Marlene hosts it. I helped write it. A lot of local people got involved in the sketches and video segments that are on the show. I think it's super funny. I think Marlene is incredibly great as host of the show, both in the desk segments and in some of the like video sketches that we put together. The full pilot is there, the entire episode, but also individual clips of the various segments of the show are on there. I think it is absolutely worth going and subscribing to that YouTube channel. And if you're so inclined, even sharing those videos on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr. There's one segment in particular that is about the sort of generational divide between boomers and millennials that I feel like is ready made for sharing. So I know that I'm asking you to help me out in promoting my wife's thing, but I genuinely, sincerely feel like it's really good.
Yeah, and I can totally co-sign that. I watched the clips that are up yesterday, in fact, and the one about millennials and boomers is delightful. Marlene, of course, we've said it. Marlene's the funniest person either of us know. She's great. You may know her, if you're just an Ajax listener, you may know her as Mysterio.
Or the ghost of Halloween was 2 days ago.
Or the ghost of Halloween was 2 days ago, which is still one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. Her comedy really comes through really well on From the Ashes. It's really super fun and absolutely worth checking out. If you need someone who is not married to Marlene to also back the show.
I appreciate that cosign. And Chris, that's going to do it for our checks and recs. Let's talk about some of the comics that came out this very week.
You know, I would love to.
As I understand it, you have not read Justice League Dark, Wonder Woman, The Witching Hour, number one.
I have not had the chance to read that one yet, but I am intrigued.
All right. What if I told you?
Okay.
Chris, what if I told you that when Diana Prince was a young girl, she was tracked down by the acolytes of Hecate, the goddess of witchcraft?
No, I'm familiar with Hecate.
She was tracked down by the goddess Hecate and her acolytes, branded on her forehead with a witch symbol.
Okay.
That gave Hecate a sort of control over Wonder Woman, but then let her go as a sleeper agent for like 80 years or something like that.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Is the symbol that is branded on Wonder Woman's forehead a pentagram because she has a five-pointed star on her tiara that she usually wears?
It's not a pentagram.
Okay.
It's like an ancient Greek symbol. It's a symbol that's clearly made for the show or for the comic. She's been a sleeper agent for Hecate since her youth. And now is involved in like trying to stop other witchy things from happening since she's the de facto leader of Justice League Dark. Mm-hmm. And even though she's somewhat under Hecate's control, she's going to try to stop the overwhelming control of Hecate from taking over her and the rest of the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
I am intrigued.
I love this issue. It's written by James Tynion IV, who we've talked about on the show a lot.
Big fans.
As writing stuff we like. And Jesus Marino is doing the art in this with colors by Romulo Farjado Jr.
Romulo did Bad Blood.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So the colors in here are real nice. And I love this kind of like spooky Justice League shit.
Yeah, you know what it sounds like, Matt?
What's that?
Sounds like an awful lot of DC Universe bullshit.
It's a lot of DC Universe bullshit, yeah. You're not wrong. There's a whole scene in this book that takes place in a witch bar.
Okay. Like the Oblivion Bar?
A bar for witches. Actually, it is, in fact, the Oblivion Bar, yes.
Okay.
And Detective Chimp is all up in here, obviously. All the Justice League Dark characters are up in here. It's just real good stuff. Like a real good Halloween-y October comic to read.
And you know I love those.
Yeah. Super fun. And I believe it will continue in Wonder Woman and Justice League Dark as the month progresses. So it's going to be one of those crossovers that I think is probably mostly over and done in a month, which will be great.
Awesome. Yeah. I love it when they do stuff like that, like Omega Effect.
Yeah. It seems super good. I really enjoyed this first issue of it, at the very least. Chris, you wanted to talk about Batman number 56.
Yeah, I did, Matt. I don't know if I get Tom King anymore. And it, which is weird, because I really only got him for about 2 months there, as you might recall. Like, I've really only gotten it since Batman 50.
You're specifically talking about Tom King Batman.
I'm specifically talking, well, I mean, you were not here for the Heroes in Crisis discussion last week.
I listened to it. And honestly, I think I'm more on the L side of not super caring for it.
I'm possibly morbidly curious, but definitely curious about how that's going to go. But okay, so this is a KGB story, so I'm in by default. I'm in.
Sure.
But it's a KGB story that is largely about KGB being sad about his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we got a lot of these Batman comics about being sad about your dad in general, and specifically a lot of Batman comics about being sad about your dad in this Tom King run. Like, I really liked the Jury Duty story, which was about being sad about your dad. And, you know, the Nightwing stuff is essentially like being sad, Batman as a dad being sad, as a sad dad.
Right, it's a sad dad.
Yeah. And I get it, because it's Batman and that's his entire deal. Do not think I don't get it, because I do. But, like, we had a Kite Man story about Kite Man being a sad dad. Now we got a KGB story about being a sad dad. I'm ready to not have sad dad stories anymore.
I get it.
I'm kind of done with Batman being a sad dad comic.
Yeah.
But it's not bad for this to be the comic that is leading into whatever is happening with Nightwing. It's not bad. And it's not a bad KGB story, but it is part of a pattern that I am finding to have diminishing returns, or at least irregular returns.
I'm finding more and more that Tom King is a writer that I enjoy in certain contexts and not so much in others. Like, I love him in the Mr. Miracle, Vision, Omega Men context.
No, hang on a second. Are you talking about the Mr. Miracle book that's about Scott Free being a sad dad?
You know what? Sad dad works on that one.
And Vision is also a sad dad.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Now, again, Mr. Miracle 11 is, I believe I said on the show last week, possibly my favorite comic that has the character Mr. Miracle in it.
Uh-huh.
So don't get me wrong. It's not all bad. But it does, the villains having sad dad stories is getting on me a little bit.
I get it. I really do get it. I think some sad dad stories are better than others. But like the Tom King who is writing Heroes in Crisis, I don't know. I'll continue to give Heroes in Crisis a chance. There's been a lot of talk about Heroes in Crisis being, you guys talked about it last week, the new identity crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It reads to me more like a mid-2000s Marvel event where superheroes went out to the heartland for some reason. Like a siege. Or like a fear itself.
Well, Captain America had to catch up on NASCAR after he got called out, Matt.
That's true. But it really feels like a superhero is going out to the heartland and dealing with real America kind of stuff. Or you know, dealing with emotions that they keep bottled up sorts of things. Than Identity Crisis, which was everybody's terrible to each other, you know?
Yeah.
Even though we're not talking about Heroes in Crisis, but the Tom King who writes Batman is both of those to me. Sometimes he's the Tom King I really like, and sometimes he's the other guy.
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't think I don't think this story's bad, but like it is, I can't imagine sitting down and reading all of these Tom King comics in the way that like I talked about reading all the Spider-Man comics and not finding this to be a blatant pattern that is impossible to ignore. And that's not entirely a bad thing if it's done well, but I don't know. It's not working for me in this one.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it.
What is our final comic this week, Matt?
Our final comic is Superior Octopus number 1, written by Christos Engage, who we talked about moments ago, being one of the credited writers for the Spider-Man game, with art by Mike Hawthorne and Wade Von Graubadger, with colors by Jordi Belair. And this is not a bad comic by any stretch. It is a comic that sort of has to rush through some things because it has a lot to fix.
Okay.
It can't just be the new Dr. Octopus being a superhero in San Francisco book and kind of fighting D-list villains, which Chris, you know, I love a D-list villain.
Matt, I know you do.
I deeply love them. And the fact that Superior Octopus seems to be almost entirely about Dr. Octopus fighting D-list villains is very appealing to me. But there's a couple things that the book has to get out of the way before it can really dive into that.
Okay.
First of all, it has to deal with Doc Ock having worked with Hydra.
Okay.
So there has to be like 6 pages in this book of him being like, no, get out of here, Hydra. You suck. I made a mistake by working with you earlier. And then he also has to deal with having misrepresented himself to Anna Maria Marconi because he was in Peter Parker's body then.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, it can't just get to the story. It's gotta get out of the way. The like, okay, yeah, we know this stuff happened with Doc Ock, but it's okay now, kind of thing.
Okay,
like he's gotta destroy an Artem Zola body, right? So we know he's not cool with Hydra anymore,
right? Talk about the biophonetic.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will say this one very cool thing. Part of his sort of hybrid Spider-Man Dr. Octopus costume, instead of shooting webs, he shoots ink. And speaking of big time, classic big time character Max Modell is in this comic.
Oh, I do like Max Modell. Oh, that's it, because Horizon is Horizon University now.
Right. So he's hanging out at Horizon University.
Okay.
Doing stuff there. Also, a pretty cool thing that happens like right at the beginning is Doc Ock quickly takes down, you know, a group of D-list bad guys, right? And then recruits them into his charge. Like, recruits them into working for him, basically. Like, being his eyes and ears in the street. Which is, like, something you can have Doc Ock do that Spider-Man won't do. So, I appreciated that. And, you know, would like to see more of that kind of stuff in the book. And I think now that it has covered some of the, you know, gotten rid of some of the blockers, gotten rid of some of the cleaned up, the unnecessary stuff, or the continuity stuff, there could be more of that in the book.
Well, that's good.
All right, Chris. Now that we've talked about the comics of the week, it is incumbent upon us to rank some characters.
It is our lot in life, Matt.
That's right. It's time for Panel President.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message
from the President's office in the White House.
panel president.
Now, what is the panel president list?
Panel president. We take some listener-submitted lists and place those characters on a huge, ever-expanding master list from best to worst. We elect the best characters and we impeach the worst characters. Panel president. Chris, our first list is going to come from Josh Bell, who is a line stepper.
Alrighty.
Who has a list themed after the theme, Aquatic Adventurers.
Okay. I'm wary, but okay.
You're not big on the sea people.
I am not. I do not want them to be part of my world.
All right. How about we start with Manphibian?
I know nothing about, like, if you pressed me right now, I would guess Manphibian was a Marvel character?
Yeah, he's in the Legion of Monsters.
Okay. I know who that is. I have no opinion on Manphibian.
There's kind of nothing to him.
It is rare that you come across someone that I'm like, I have no opinion on this comic book character, but here we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird that Marvel just has Dracula, right? Mm-hmm. Marvel just has Frankenstein.
The monster of Frankenstein.
But they couldn't do the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Right.
So they had to create their own. Like, they had to make their own Gilman.
Yeah, because Gilman, copyright. Not in the in the public domain.
Yeah, copyrighted.
Yeah, TM.
I mean, so that's basically all he is. He's just Marvel Gilman.
Yeah. And that's not as good as Marvel Dracula.
No.
Probably not as good as Marvel Frankenstein, who also is kind of a bunch of nothing. None of them are as good as Marvel Dracula.
Yeah.
Ain't none of them are out there fighting the X-Men.
He was in Nick Fury's Howling Commandos very briefly.
But that was the Monster Howling Commandos,
that
right?
That was the Monster Howling Commandos, yeah.
That was the Howling Commandos nobody read. Which, I'm sorry, I thought it was a great concept, but no one read that book.
Fair.
Yeah, I have zero opinion on Manphibian. Do you honestly have an opinion on Manphibian?
He's a bunch of nothing.
Yeah,
if we're being honest.
I don't. How often have we had to disqualify a panel president candidate?
I mean, do we disqualify him, or do we just put him on the list? Like, I think we put him on the they're a bunch of nothing part of the list.
I mean, I can't tell you a thing I've seen him do.
But like, we've read comics with him in them. It's not like we are totally unfamiliar with Manphibian.
Yeah, he's in Frankencastle for a little bit.
Yeah.
But, like, he might as well not be.
I mean, fair.
Okay, here's the thing. If I can't think of anything this character does that mean they are worse than a character who actively makes a book bad? Because you can remove Manphibian, and I would never notice. If Marvel did not have Manphibian, I would never notice.
I think that makes them neutral. Like, totally neutral. Like, they don't improve a book, but they don't make it worse.
So, who makes a book worse by being in it? Obviously, we should have said this at the beginning. We have 390 characters on the list. At the top of the list, Peter Parker, the amazing, spectacular, adjectiveless Spider-Man. Bottom of the list, bunch of characters that make comics worse by being in them.
Well, I mean, okay. I think we've got a good part of the, like, a good chunk of the list where, like, we have some mixed bag characters, like Snapper Carr. I think Manphibian goes below all of those.
Yeah, here's what I'm going to tell you, Matt, and I don't know if you'll believe me when I tell you this, but it is the God's honest truth. If Access showed up tomorrow, I would lose my mind. If okay. Manphibian was in the next issue of Spider-Man that I read, I would not care one whit.
Yeah. I mean, okay. But Access is pretty low, right? Yeah, he's down here.
No, Axis is in, like, the bottom 15.
Yeah, I don't think Manphibian's that bad. Like, Axis is in the bad part of the list. I think where you start looking is somewhere around, like, Gunfire.
But, here's the thing, though. I've recently read comics that have, like, Jericho in them, and I'd be fine if Jericho wasn't there, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't hurt Priest's run on Deathstroke that Jericho is in it, you know?
I don't think it hurts a book if Manphibian's in it.
But it doesn't do anything to the book.
I don't think Jericho being in a book does anything to a book, except maybe make it worse.
I don't know, like, I'm looking at all these characters, and I'm like, I would rather read about that guy. Like, I'm more curious about that guy.
Do you have anything for the mime?
I do. I kind of like the mime as a design.
Okay.
I don't love, God, what is her awful name? She has a bad name.
Yeah, let's not even say it.
Okay. But, like, you know, I think the mime is... Mime ain't hurting anybody. I mean, except that she is, of course.
Yeah, but the point I've been making is Manphibian's not hurting anybody either. He's just not helping anybody.
We're spending so much time on Manphibian. Let's place him.
I think, like, just put him right below Mime.
Okay, so the Mime is currently at the list at number 368. So, okay, this is fair. I'll put Manphibian above Superboy Prime.
Yeah.
Manphibian enters the list at number 300. Nice.
Next on Josh's list is Mera of Zebul.
There are people out there in this world that have strong opinions about Mera. Our good friend Megan Nielsen, they are one of them.
Well, Megan is a local Aquaman expert.
Megan is a local Aquaman expert and has thoughts and feelings about Mera, Aquaman's wife. I do not. You know me, I am not a man of Aquaman comics.
Sure.
I will say this. And this is not to like this is not to take away from Mira's status as a prominent female character in that franchise. She has the powers that should be Aquaman's powers. The power where she makes stuff out of water, that like should be like Brave and the Bold Aquaman can do that. And that should be Aquaman's power.
I'll say this. I don't really have much of anything for Mera.
Mm-hmm.
I do think Mera's slightly better than Aquaman.
I would rather read about Mera than Aquaman.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather Mera be on the Justice League.
I would be more intrigued about Mera being on the Justice League.
Because in addition to having the powers that Aquaman should have, mm-hmm. she also has that kind of, like, neutral alignment that people say Aquaman has all the time, but he doesn't really.
Mm-hmm.
She's got more of that Namor alignment.
She does have a little bit of that Namor alignment. I would buy Mera fighting the Justice League more than I would buy Aquaman fighting the Justice League.
Same. Like, every time Aquaman has been portrayed as a villain in, like, an Elseworlds or, you know, some kind of alternate universe, it should have been Mera.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, so currently Aquaman is number 276 on the list.
Okay.
And currently Namor is 262. I think Mera goes between them.
Yeah, I don't think she's as good as Namor. I know this is going to cause some controversy. I don't like Mera as much as I like Livewire, and I don't like Mera as much as I like Wilbur Day, the Spectacular Stilt Man.
I mean, I think Mr. Mrs. Pitlick has more story possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably similarly underutilized, like Forge, as Forge. I think Mare is probably better than Rewind.
Rewind's pretty good. Rewind made me cry, Matt. Marion never made me cry.
Okay.
And like, look, and I'm just saying, there's a long list of characters that have made me cry.
Sure.
And Mira's not on it.
Well, below Rewind, we have Billy Kaplan, Guy Gardner, Azrael, and Comet the Superhorse.
I would be willing to put Mira over all of them except Azrael. Because I fucking love Azrael. Oh, man, he's got the system in him.
Okay, but Azrael is below several of those.
I know. Look, okay. Let's put Mira right under Azrael. That puts her two spots above Aquaman.
Okay. Right. So it shall be.
Mira enters the list at number 274. Below Azrael, JPV, Batman 2. Technically he is.
Technically he is.
And above Comet the Super Horse, who is not a horse.
He got to be Batman before Dick Grayson, which seems like a real... real travesty.
Yep. Sure did.
Finally, on Josh's list, I think we can scroll up on this one.
Okay.
Abe Sapien.
Oh, I like Abe Sapien.
Yeah. He's very good.
Abe Sapien's origin is wild.
Uh-huh.
Because you think he's just Gilman. You know? You think you got a Manphibian situation on your hands.
Nope.
Except with a good character.
He was a scientist.
Yeah, he was a dude.
Yeah.
He Cobra commanded himself.
He did.
Yeah. That shit's wild.
And he got his name because of a tube in a lab that was dated from the date of Abraham Lincoln's assassination.
Uh-huh. He sure did, Matt.
Love it.
He sure did. Yeah. Hellboy is pretty good and super wild, if you're unaware.
Yeah.
Hellboy is bonkers.
Yeah.
I like Abe. He's not my favorite of the Burbard characters.
Who's your favorite?
Non-Hellboy?
Non-Hellboy division, yeah.
Probably Liz.
Liz is great.
I like Liz a lot.
How about Roger the Homunculus?
I like Roger, but Roger's good. Roger's very good, actually. Roger doesn't have that weird. I mean, he does. He's a homunculus, but like his origin is fairly straightforward.
Yeah,
finding out what Abe's deal was bananas.
Oh yeah. It's just like, what kind of history shit can we throw in a blender?
Yeah.
To make this fish man.
And it works, is the thing. Absolutely. It all works.
Abe, I feel like Abe, arguably Liz, is as fully formed.
Mm-hmm.
But Abe is one of the most fully formed BPRD characters.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know we have Kate Corrigan on the list. Do we have Liz?
I don't know if we have Kate Corrigan.
I thought we did.
I don't think we have a ton of BPRD people on the list. No, well, we don't have
Kate Corrigan.
We don't have Kate Corrigan. We don't have Liz. We don't have Roger the Homunculus.
We do have Hellboy. He's at number 16.
Yeah, we do have Hellboy. I mean, he's not going to go up that high.
Right. I don't. I mean, he could on this list. He could be a top 100 character, though.
Yeah, I think arguably he's up there with Robo.
Yeah, I would say that. I think he's. Is he as well developed as Jack Knight?
Yes and no. It's kind of tough. It's kind of tough to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because he's in different types of stories than Jack Knight, you know?
Yeah. But there's a lot of work that went into like defining Jack Knight as a character. And I'm not saying there wasn't a lot of work in Abe.
There's a lot of backfilling on it.
Yes.
I think he's weirdly comparable to mm-hmm. two other characters in like the 80s of the list. 80s, 90s.
Okay.
One is Beta Ray Bill.
All right, interesting.
And the other is Robot Man.
Hmm. Interesting. I don't think I like him as much as Beta Ray Bill. I know I don't like him as much as I like Kraven the Hunter.
Okay.
You could probably talk me into I think above Robot, below Jack Knight.
I think you're probably right on that. I think that's the place for old Abe.
Yeah.
Which gets him in the top 100.
It does. He is number 98 on the list, Abe Sapien.
And knocks Black Cat out of the top 100.
Yeah. Sorry, Felicia. Bye, Felicia.
Bye, Felicia. We had that opportunity, and it took us a minute to get there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's a new list from Stephen Matthews.
Alrighty. That's your name.
Yes, as a last name, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Stephen's list, the theme is magical girls.
Okay, I'm into it. Let's do this.
It includes Stephen's favorite female characters from Marvel, DC, and manga. And two major bottom shooters.
Ooh, okay. So this is a five character list.
It's a five character list.
Okay, this is a quintet.
We're starting with Megan Gwynn, aka Pixie of the X-Men.
I like Pixie. I think Pixie's really fun, but I would be hard after having this exact conversation about Manphibian. I would be hard-pressed to say there was a lot there.
Well, she's not a character who's been around for a long time.
She is not.
She debuted in New X-Men Academy X.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not read a ton of stories with Pixie in them. I didn't read the New X-Men book. I believe I remember her being part of like Manifest Destiny and Second Coming.
Yeah, she's around for those.
But I guess she was there for Schism.
Who wasn't?
Yeah. But I don't really know much of anything about Pixie. So,
I mean, she's a girl who's basically a D&D character. She's an OC. She's basically a D&D OC. As an X-Man, which I don't think is bad. I don't think that's bad at all. I like Pixie a lot. But again, I don't think there's a ton there.
So she, like several of the characters on this list, she could be a character who, if there's a run that really uses her.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, Pixie kind of fills the Kitty Pryde Jubilee armor slot, right?
Yeah.
Except all three of those characters were still around when Pixie was created.
Yeah.
And like it is very difficult to get a newer X-Men character over, right? And I feel like Pixie has just been in the background. I'm sure she's had a spotlight story here and there, but I think the word for Pixie is potential. As opposed to realized potential.
Right.
That's where I'm at.
Okay. What is that region of the list? We like them, but they have some unrealized potential.
I mean, I can't say she goes above Barry Allen, you know, much as I would like to.
Like, does she go like somewhere around where, say, Husk is?
But that's the thing. Husk has had way more opportunity as a character.
Yeah, I like Husk. I like Husk a lot, actually.
I like Paige Guthrie.
Does she go somewhere around where, say, like Sink or Maggot go?
Probably in that area. I mean, they've had more stories, but I think in terms of, yeah, I think that's where they would go, where Pixie would go.
Okay. So in that region, we have, starting at number 340, we have David Knight Starman, Black Bolt, Union Jack, Sync, Maggot, Skin, Ambush Bug.
I would put her above David Knight for sure.
Above David Knight.
I would put her below Doomsday.
Okay.
Because Doomsday still has a little bit of that shine.
Okay.
But I would put her above Snapper Carr.
Okay, then there she will go. At the new number 339, we are placing Pixie.
From the X-Men.
Next on Steven's list is Zatanna Zatara.
Big fan. Love Zatanna.
Great.
She's great. She's great. She's Terg. That one got you.
It was, yeah, you got me. I'll say this, like, I'm a big Zatanna fan. I'm not as big of a fan as Paul Dini, who married her.
Yes. Yeah, that's a shoot, brother.
That's a shoot.
I am not as big a fan of Zatanna as Paul Dini, because I would not put Zatanna into a Batman run. Like, immediately, as a major character.
But you know what? I didn't think that didn't work.
No, that's the thing. It worked. It worked well, in fact. But, I don't know, it wouldn't... I feel like when Zatanna... Okay. Legitimately, when Zatanna became the DC Universe's designated goth girl, I think she really found her niche. Because 70s Zatanna doesn't work, right? Like Justice League era Zatanna doesn't work that well.
Okay,
because
yeah.
Having a magic character on the Justice League is often very weird because it raises a lot of questions. It's very similar to having Doctor Strange be an Avenger where, okay, well, what can this guy not do? You know, what can Zatanna not do?
Well, I think that if you put Doctor Strange or Zatanna in one of those all-purpose roles, like on one of those like straightforward, straight-ahead superhero teams, it's limiting.
Yeah.
Right? Because they got to fight magic shit for it to work. Like having a super powerful magician on the team to fight, you know, crooks, people who are doing thefts or whatever. That's not one-to-one, you know?
But like, why not, though? It hasn't been historically, but why not? Why can't Zatanna fight Despero?
I don't know. I think Zatanna, and this has been borne out in recent years, Zatanna is best when she is on a team of people, if she's on a team, who are doing magic things, who are involved in magic stuff, which... Having Justice League Dark around for Zatanna to be a part of is perfect.
Yeah, she tends to work really well in a particular milieu.
Yeah.
If we really want to get pretentious about it, which I do, obviously. But I think that she's a really good character on the fringes because there is a weird dividing line in the superhero genre between superhero stuff and supernatural stuff, you know?
Yes.
Very few characters totally. Can kind of travel between those two genres.
Yeah.
Like even and Billy Batson, you don't think of Billy Batson as being a magic character, you know?
No. He's just a straight up superhero.
Yeah. Who happens to know a wizard.
Okay. Here's the question.
Mm-hmm.
Is Zatanna Sabrina good?
Zatanna's not Sabrina good. Zatanna's not Black Cat good.
Oh, so she's not making the top 100.
I don't think she makes the top 100. Not on this list.
Okay. Okay.
But I don't think she's... I think she's probably better than Mystique. I think she's probably about as usable as Mystique as a character.
Yeah, agreed.
You know?
Is she as good as Emma Frost?
I would say no.
All right, then I think we found our spot.
Yeah, I mean, am I wrong?
I could go back and forth on it for a long time. But I think you're probably right that Zatanna is going between Emma Frost and Mystique.
Yeah. I feel like Emma is a more versatile character who has proven that very much over recent years.
Finally on Steven's list is a character I'm going to step aside for, and Chris, I'm going to let you take the reins on this. Mm-hmm. Usagi Tsukino, a.k.a. Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon.
Scroll the fuck up, my dude. The best. Legitimately, we are looking at top 10 material with Sailor Moon.
Okay. Okay.
She's great. She is a well developed character. She's an interesting character. She is defined by her limitations in the same way as Spider-Man. She is the magical girl genre Spider-Man.
I can buy that. I can buy that.
And also is a team leader. And is very, like weirdly, the thing that limits her is that she's not adaptable to multiple stories in the way that a Batman is, a Ben Grimm is, a Peter Parker is. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of ways, that's not how most manga superhero stories are constructed. Most manga superheroes like shonen or shonen manga superheroes have set goals, right? Like Kamen Rider is there to fight Shocker in the way that G.I. Joe is there to fight Cobra. Sailor Moon is there to fight her villains. And it's weird to pull her out of that. Like anytime she steps out of that, things can get a little weird and unfamiliar with her. But within that genre, choice. Right now at number 10, we have Barbara Gordon, and I love Barbara Gordon. There is no way that Sailor Moon doesn't go at least right below Barbara Gordon, possibly as high as a Lois Lane.
I mean, this is all you, man. This is all you to decide.
I mean, I'm going to do it. I'm saying better than Wally West.
So between Lois Lane and Wally West.
Yep, I'm doing it. Number 9 on the list.
Go Sailor Moon. Wow. Well, just you wait until we get to the Battle of the Usagis.
Oh, boy. That's going to be a tough one. That is legit going to be a tough one.
When we get Miyamoto Usagi.
Because that's something else I've been rereading lately. Guess what? It rules.
God, it's good.
Oh, it's so good.
We're talking about Usagi Yojimbo, yeah. If you don't know what we're talking about, everybody.
Masterless Samurai.
Okay, next on Steven's list, we've got our bottom shooters. Starting with Taro, Witch of the Black Rose.
All right, I'm going to say something controversial.
Hit me.
Taro's not a terrible character.
She's not.
Taro's a character in extremely bad stories. Taro herself is not necessarily a bad character in the way that a lot of other bad characters that we have on the list are. Right?
Not in the way that a lot of other bad characters on the list are. That is correct, yes.
She is... Like, she is weirdly everything that we've been talking about, because she's kind of like that weird Zatanna-style magic superhero, because she's in a weird superhero world, but she only deals with the magic stuff in it. And she's also, like, kind of trapped in that genre, like, in her idiom. Unfortunately, her idiom is very bad stories.
But, okay. What adjectives would you use to describe tarot?
I mean, many of them would be physical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, kind of by, like that's not my fault either.
I'm not saying it is. I'm saying there's kind of not a lot. There's kind of not a lot to tarot.
The worst thing about tarot is that she's pretentious. She
okay.
To me, I think, comes off as a pretentious character, especially given the nature of her stories.
Are you talking about how she's constantly explaining what skyclad means?
Uh-huh. That's I think, an issue.
I think tarot's a cipher, right?
In a lot of ways, yeah.
She's there to do what the story that Jim Ballant is trying to tell necessitates. And a lot of times that necessitates her just taking her clothes off.
Yeah. I mean, she is perpetually made a victim in those stories, like constantly. Which is weird because she is the title character who is a superhero. But she is very much like, there's always a drawn out, and it's not just, you know, Amazing Spider-Man 32 ends with Peter buried under rubble. Amazing Spider-Man 3, he picks it up. Tarot is very much, like, it's not good. But I think that's more about the story than the character, but the character is kind of a cipher.
Yeah, I it's hard to separate Tarot, the character, from the stories she is in.
I will say this. She's not the worst character in Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose.
Oh, no. The worst character in Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose is John.
Yeah, Skeleton Man.
Yeah, he sucks.
Yeah, he sucks real bad. Jiminy Christmas. Where are we going to put her? What do we do with her? Is she worse than Snowflame? I don't think so.
I think she's comparable, weirdly.
You know who she's comparable to? This is going to sound rude, and I don't mean it in any rude way. She's a lot like Ace the Bat Hound.
That's going to need a little explaining, I think.
No, because Ace is just there, right? Like, he's there because Ace exists because Crypto exists. He's never as good as you want him to be. He never does anything. He's just kind of there for a couple stories, and then he exists as a footnote. I feel like, I mean, Tarot's existence is justified, but like, she's probably a better character than the Beyonder.
Probably.
Is she?
Is she a better character than the Technician?
Talking about the Technician from the Craftsman Bolt-On System promo comic that Josh Williams wrote.
Who you can describe with adjectives.
Very determined.
Determined, handy.
Helpful, handy. Okay, we're going to put Tarot at number 312. Okay. We should be putting Tarot at number 3 nice, but...
I mean, that's not how it worked out.
So, Rowan, a.k.a. Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, goes onto the list at number 312. That's a weirdly tough one.
Speaking of weirdly tough ones.
Uh-huh.
And speaking of characters who... try to bridge the divide between superhero stuff and magic stuff. Finally, on Steven's list, as a bottom shooter, which I think is a little unfair,
okay,
we have Scarlet Witch, a.k.a. Wanda Maximoff.
You know I'm not a big fan of Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
Again, bottom shooter, I think, is... Scarlet Witch is not going on the bottom of the list.
No.
But I can see the logic.
I can understand why someone would have a distaste for Scarlet Witch, especially if most of their familiarity with Scarlet Witch is from, like, House of M.
Well, yeah, right? I mean, think about Scarlet Witch over the past, like, purely over the past, or in the 21st century. That's 18 years, where I would say you're pretty justified in thinking of the Scarlet Witch as a character who is largely a prop.
Largely a prop, or... someone who is used in stories about trauma that succeed to various degrees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because so much of her story has become about her kids.
Her kids, who, if you don't know, are Master Pandemonium's arms.
That's right.
That's them babies. Or, when you got baby arms, that's them.
Or conversely, they are two of the Young Avengers.
I do prefer it when they are that guy's arms.
Sure. But there's lots of good Wanda stuff from the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s. Like, I think Wanda's used really well in the Perez Busiek Avengers run.
Is she, though?
I think, at least early on. She's the star of that that Arthurian time story.
Yes, that is true.
I mean, look, there's a lot to... There's a lot of arguments against Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
She's a prop. She is often depicted as a woman who has lost her faculties.
Yeah.
Because of grief.
In her worst portrayals, she is a hysterical woman.
Yes, that is true.
Which I think is an unfortunate John Byrne-ism.
Her powers don't make a lot of sense.
In the same way that I think you can level a pretty justified criticism at Zatanna for having undefined powers, Scarlet Witch's powers are completely undefined. I don't know what she does.
She can change reality, but that can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah, it can mean she alters probability, but what does that mean?
Right.
Like, because she's not Domino and Longshot who alter probability, but...
I mean, it's also often described as chaos magic.
Ooh, with a K?
No, with a CH.
Oh. No,
but
no, magic with a K, man. Magic with a K.
Oh, I see. I think sometimes there's a K on it and sometimes there's not. But it's also sometimes called chaos magic, which is also, it can be whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it can be whatever they want it to be.
It's so weird to think about, like, how often we were told, specifically you and I, as children, Spider-Man can lift about 10 tons, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then how often Spider-Man goes, oh, but this, I gotta lift this much heavier thing! And he does it, and that's totally fine, because the story acknowledges the limitation and then immediately surpasses it. Whereas there are other characters that are just undefined and feel very unsatisfying, even when they're doing, like, you know, perfectly reasonable stuff.
I mean, I think we're going to end up coming down saying that Wanda is a mixed bag.
Yeah, mixed bag for sure.
She is often portrayed unfortunately, yet she has also been portrayed as capable and sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of get what you get with Scarlet Witch.
I think it is. I think it's very fair to say that a lot of her, historically speaking, not a lot going on. And honestly, like, even like MCU wise, very much a prop in Civil War, right?
Yeah. And you know, in House of M, she's a plot point rather than a character.
Yeah. She's hard done by, honestly.
Yeah. Okay, here's a question. Does she surpass the character who has her kids for hands? Master Pandemonium.
That, Matt, the question there is this a list we are carving from marble, or is the list there and we are merely revealing it? Because if you and I are carving it, then I would say I have no conflicted feelings about Master Pandemonium.
I mean, I think then she goes below if you do not have any conflicted feelings.
On the other hand, objectively speaking, Wanda Maximoff is a better character than Master Pandemonium.
Yeah.
Like, just the numbers on that one.
This one's so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
I think it's especially hard because, you know, for me at least, I was not an Avengers guy growing up. So I have no, like the nostalgia affection that I have for a character like Wally West, who's a very good character. But I, you know, a lot of that is me loving Wally West when I was 15. I don't have for Wanda. Even though when I was 15, yeah, she was in good stories. I just didn't read them then.
She was in good stories back then. Yeah.
97, boy.
I don't know. This is really hard. Like, is she up where Mera, where we put Mera?
Okay. I like her more than I like Sinestro.
Okay.
I probably like her more than I like Lobo. I don't know if I like her more than I like Aquaman.
Interestingly depicted in a real grab bag of different levels of quality in much the same way as Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
And inconsistent in the way that Aquaman so often is also.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you, I mean, I'm fine with putting her right below Aquaman, right, to be honest.
Then I think that's where she's got to go.
Okay.
Can we...
Which puts her below one of her kids, Wiccan, who's at 274.
Terrible name. Wanda Maximoff can take heart. She is not the worst member of the Maximoff family. She is not going to be the lowest ranked branch off that family tree.
You talking about a certain Speedy Boy?
Don't like him. Do not care for him.
All right, we're going to try to get through one more list, if we can.
All right, speed run tactics. Let's do it. Use the glitch.
This list comes from Matt Robotham. That's my name.
That is your name.
These are some Marvel characters. We kick things off with Venom, which we, I think, must disqualify.
Okay.
There are multiple Venoms.
There are multiple Venoms. So the question is, are we talking about Edward Eddie Brock?
Yep.
Are we talking about the Clintar symbiote?
Are we talking about MacGargan, also known as the Scorpion?
Are we talking about Angelo Fortunato? No, definitely not.
We could be.
He was Venom for one issue. Are we talking about Eugene Flash Thompson?
Are we talking about She-Venom?
We could be.
And Weighing.
Are we talking about Spider-Man?
We don't know. I think you probably mean Eddie Brock. There, Matt, but for the sake of clarity, I think we have to disqualify just Venom.
Yeah, we're going to need a specific on that.
We're gonna need a name of – I mean, I guess we could rank the symbiote Venom.
I'd rather not.
Which is a sentient being.
It is a sentient being.
But I think we're going to need a specific host for Venom.
Yeah, I think so.
There, Matt.
I will say this, just in case anyone's curious, you're not a fan, I believe. Is that correct?
I don't like him.
Yeah, you're not a Venom guy.
Next on the list is someone we've already ranked. Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan.
Great. Fantastic.
Currently in the nice spot. Next on Matt's list is Amadeus Cho.
Ooh. Wait, do we not have Amadeus on this list?
We do not.
We don't have Mastermind Accello, a.k.a. the Totally AKA Awesome Hulk.
The Totally Awesome Hulk, that's right.
Amadeus Cho is great. Amadeus Cho might be the... of all the characters in the Marvel Universe whose deal is they're a genius, Amadeus Cho is the best.
I would agree. And we've answered the question on the show before of, like, who's a great character who's not a legacy character? Unfortunately, Amadeus Cho is a legacy
character.
Technically
a legacy character.
Because Mastermind Accello was a Golden Age character.
Yes. And
but he's so different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you'll remember the deal with Amazing Fantasy 15, which is where he made his first appearance, was that there were going to be three new characters introduced, and all of them were all new characters, but they were all legacy characters. So we got the Scorpion, second Scorpion out of that, who I like a lot. I think she's a really cool and really underutilized character. I would love to see her in the Spider-Man family more often. We got Mastermind Xillo, and then we got it was a Dan Slott character that was like playing card based, but I forget the name.
You know what Amadeus Cho is?
What's that?
He's the Rick Jones of the 21st century.
Oh, and he's the Rick Jones we needed.
Tell me I'm wrong, though.
You're not. You're not at all wrong.
Because he has been the Hulk sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the New Warriors. He was part of the Mighty Avengers. He was a member of the Illuminati. He's been a member of S.H.I.E.L.D. He was in the Champions. He was Iron Spider. He was the Prince of Power. He has been a Hulk himself.
Mm-hmm.
He is the new reader identification character who gets to do everything.
Yeah, he really does.
The only difference is Rick Jones is kind of a dummy. And Amadeus Cho is one of the smartest people on
Earth. I like how you say kind of a dummy. Like, I think you mean huge fucking idiot. The visual representation of Amadeus doing the math is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a good visual to, like, that representation of, oh, this is what being super intelligent looks like in comics. Like, here's a visual way to get intelligence across. It is amazing that they figured out how to do that. Like, and I believe that first story was Takeshi Miyazawa. So I believe that is down to either him or Greg Pak. But yeah, like that alone is a strong recommendation for Amadeus Cho. I think Amadeus is great.
Also, he's got a pet coyote.
He has a pet coyote named Kirby.
Yep.
Very good. Very, very good.
He's great. Is he going in the part of the list that has like Ms. Marvel? Because I think he is similarly good to those sort of like newish characters.
We heavily value adaptability.
Yes.
It's one of the reasons we love Ben Grimm so much. Put him in any story, he works. Has any 21st century character proved themselves to be as adaptable as Amadeus Cho? We listed off everything he's done, and it's all made sense.
Yeah, he has had a staying power that has been admirable.
Yeah.
So the part of the list that has Ms. Marvel also has Becky Burdock, Vampire Reporter.
I do love Becky Burdock.
Kate Bishop. Kara Zor-El, Supergirl. America Chavez. The Squire. I feel like Amadeus Cho belongs in that company.
I don't think he beats Kara Zor-El.
Okay. I think he probably beats Miss America, though.
Miss America, like, Miss America is good for the exact opposite reason. Miss America is good because she's so simple.
Very consistent, yes. Yeah.
And Amadeus is good because he's so complex.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that's tough. Better or worse than Kamala Khan, I think, is what we've got to answer.
I mean, we said
not as good
he's
as,
going
okay.
below Supergirl, so.
Better than the Squire, for sure. So, better or worse than Miss America Chavez. I mean, it's the adaptability. I gotta say yes.
Yeah, I think he's going to go between Supergirl and Miss America.
All right.
So, but it's a very close. It's very close.
All right. Amadeus Cho, a.k.a. the Totally Awesome Hulk. Mastermind Xillo.
And many other things.
Iron Spider. Prince of Power.
Yep.
Etc.
Okay. Next on Matt's list is one identity of a long-standing character.
Okay.
Because he has Red Hulk, and then he has, in parentheses, General Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross. I think the main character is Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah.
who happened to have been a Red Hulk for a while.
Yes. Who is not the best Red Hulk. Shockingly enough. Best Red Hulk was the one who was on the U.S. Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I got nothing for Thunderbolt Ross, man.
He's You know what Thunderbolt Ross is?
What's that?
He's supposed to... He was meant to be, I think, Hulk's J. Jonah Jameson.
Yes, exactly.
He's a civilian foil for the hero who is not really a supervillain, but is a thorn in their side all the time.
Mm-hmm. Someone who thinks of the hero as a menace, or the protagonist as a menace.
Yeah.
Who needs to be hunted down.
Right. But Thunderbolt Ross has the ability and power to send military strike forces after the Hulk. Also, Bruce Banner just happens to be dating his daughter.
Yeah. So he's basically, what if J. Jonah Jameson was also Hiram Lodge?
Yeah. I find Thunderbolt Ross to be kind of one note.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, honestly.
The only stories that really happen with Thunderbolt Ross are, I can't believe my daughter's with you, or like the, oh, I guess we're reconciling.
Yeah.
Bruce, you're actually okay story. And that's it.
Yeah, I mean, until he's the Red Hulk. But again, Robert L. Maverick is the better Red Hulk. He's got sunglasses. Yeah,
well, when Thunderbolt Ross was the Red Hulk, his whole deal was just like, oh, you don't know who I am. Oh, I'm Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't really make sense for him to be Thunderbolt Ross.
No, it really didn't.
So.
That book wasn't about making sense.
It was about the mystery of who the Red Hulk was. I don't know. He's not, like, at the bottom of the list, but he's not, like, near the top either.
Do you think we're getting into, like, the same kind of Manphibian territory where it's just, like, I got nothing for him?
I think he's probably better than Manphibian. Because, I mean, he's useful as a foil.
He has stuck around as a relatively major supporting character for years.
Yeah.
You know, decades, even.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's better than, like, Victoria Hand, who's another supporting character.
Okay.
I don't know if he's better than D-Man, though.
Talk about Demolition Dumpy?
That's right.
That's a tough one. That's a toughie. I did just recently read that Secret Wars 2, Cal Starks, Ramon Villalobos, D-Man story. That's awfully good.
I don't think he's better than D-Man. He might be better than Jade.
Jenny Lynn Hayden?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong.
Okay. Then I think that's where Thunderbolt Ross is going to go. The new number 302.
The new number 302. General Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross.
Finally here on Matt's list is Star-Lord Peter Quill.
I like him. I've written him.
Yeah.
I like him. Here's what's wild about Star-Lord. Is that he completely changed for Annihilation. Completely. And that influenced the movie version, which then changed him again to be a little more like the movie version.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, we're doing a lot of comparing characters to kind of older versions of themselves, like the same ideas. He's Corsair.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
He's like, what if Corsair was just a dude and not Cyclops' dad? Because he's a space pirate. And I loved that look that he had with the jacket, like the Rocketeer jacket. Oh, I loved that. With the flame on it. Oh, so good.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was a different kind of look, but it was good.
Yeah.
He's a character who has changed very drastically.
Yeah, like, because the original Star-Lord is a bunch of nothing.
He's kind of boring.
And then, Star-Lord was not seen for about 20 years. And then the homie Timothy Zahn, that's right, the creator of Grand Admiral Thrawn himself, busted in for like a 3-issue Star-Lord series, maybe 2 issues in the 90s. Do you remember that?
I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah. people were like, oh yeah, Marvel has a Han Solo, sort of.
And that's kind of what he became.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of the Star-Lord that was in Annihilation.
Yeah. It's
and since then he's become more Chris Pratty.
Yes. I like him a lot, but I think as the, you know, you kind of can't get around him being a bit of a bumbler these days.
Right.
Which is not a bad thing. Like I think that makes him a Han Solo. Han Solo is not a bad character archetype.
I think we got to ding him for inconsistency. I understand why the character changed, but he's not the same Star-Lord that existed in 1976.
But is that in itself a bad thing? Because it's not like he's not the same character. But I mean, Batman's not the same character either.
But he's still Batman, right? Like, if you put 1976 Star-Lord up against 2018 Star-Lord, they essentially just share a name, mm-hmm. and that they're space dudes.
Yeah. Also, it's kind of a bad name. We can admit that, yeah. right? Nobody's listening to this. We can admit that. Star-Lord's kind of a bad name.
Yeah, they didn't dunk on Star-Lord in the movie. Like, superhero names get dunked on in movies all the time.
They shouldn't, thank God. Because, you know, it is something that in the movie his dying mother called him.
That's true. I mean, he just got that one moment where Jaimin Hansu was like, who?
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, I don't know. Star-Lord's good, but he's not, like, top of the list good.
Yeah.
I don't think.
I like him, but I think, you know, I don't know. I think where you see inconsistency, I see adaptability.
Yeah, I see it more as inconsistency. I think, unlike Amadeus Cho, who I think changes to be used in stories because people like Amadeus Cho,
mm-hmm.
Star-Lord changes because we just need a guy to do a thing. You know? It's not because people love Star-Lord. I mean, I guess they do now because of the movies. But it's not because people love Star-Lord. It's just like, oh, we need somebody to like be the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy now. I guess this guy. You know?
I don't know that I agree.
Okay. That's like, fair.
I think that's why he comes back in Annihilation and is, you know, is the Peter Quill that we know today. But I think since then he's mostly like he's changed to be a little more movie Star-Lord. Like when I was writing him, I was basically writing Outer Space Jake Peralta, or trying to, at least.
Which is good.
Yeah.
That's good.
But like I think you know the kind of not quite hapless but not, you know, frustrated outer space guy is a good character, and I think he fits that really well, and he has since Annihilation is the thing.
Okay, here's my line in the sand.
Okay.
I don't think he goes above Thanos, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't go above Annihilus.
Really? You like Annihilus more? Okay.
Annihilus has been Annihilus since day one, my man.
I mean, you're not wrong, but there's not a lot of wiggle room with that guy. He's a space locust, so
that's
kind of tough. That's a tough one to rebuild.
I mean, that's
like when the Green Goblin was a good guy for 2 years in the 90s.
That was weird.
Yeah, man, Phil Urich.
Okay, where do you think Star-Lord would go?
I mean, look, I'm not saying you're wrong about Annihilus. Thanos is for sure. I don't think again, not to be rude, I don't think he's as good as Crypto. I fucking love Crypto.
Sure.
But I think he's probably better than Dum Dum Dugan for sure. And I think that
okay.
I think he's probably better than Harvey Bullock.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
All right. Star-Lord, don't forget the hyphen. Peter Quill, enters the list number 190.
That is going to have to wrap us up for this panel president special. If you would like to send us a panel president list, you can do so at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send every story ever lists. If you want to send us a listener question that way, you certainly can. If you want to drop us a line about something else, like sponsoring the show, you can also do that there. Also, you can ask us listener questions on our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Also, check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can see the panel president and every story ever list, or at least get links to the Google Docs. You can also stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments there. If you subscribe to us on a podcasting app, such as Apple Podcasts, or if you're on Stitcher, or if you're using some other podcatcher, please leave us a review on that app. The more positive reviews we get on those apps, the more word gets out about the show, which, you know, we've only been around for 9 years. I don't know if anybody's heard of us. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, I've made it very easy. All you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net to find links to everything that I do. My books, my other podcasts, my comics, and my social media accounts are all right there. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find me right now by going to their local comic book store and saying, hey, I would like to read Infinity Wars Sleepwalker and the upcoming Army of Darkness Halloween Special 2018, because those are some comics I've written with my writing partner, Ted Bowers. Failing that, or in addition to that, you can find me at the-isb.com, which has links to everything that I write around the web, and links to where you can get my comics online as well. But it would be great if you got them from your local store, if you have one that you enjoy shopping at.
Chris, do you have some idea of how we did?
I never do this. But I promised the listeners at the top of the show it was going to be HQC.
You did. You made a promise.
And I don't know if we were able to keep that promise. I feel like we were, but I mean, I'm not the arbiter of what is H, what is Q, and what is C.
We could only hope to receive a sign from heaven that tells us that this episode was HQC. We will sit here and wait for it. Perhaps it will come to us in a dream that we must ask someone to interpret. We'll let you know what we find out next week.
So we're going to do some dream interpretation next week.
You bet.
In the style of Daniel or Joseph.
Yeah.
All right, I'm into it. Let's do it. We'll find out next week if this was HQC.
Until then, everybody, we love you.
Have a great week, everybody.
Yeah!
Flash.
From this day on.